Blast, we are back, my friend. You know what that means. Time for a little bit more Tasty Live with Confirm and Sim. Before we do, you want to take a quick look at the market?
Sure.
Even the S&P's up 17 and a half, Thomas. NASDAQ up 48 and change, 49 and change now. Russell up 7 and the Dow up 21. I guess the Dow is the weakest. It was the strongest yesterday with the even the S&P's, NASDAQ, and Russell all up around the same. Volatility in by 22 cents, but you can see volatility has fallen after making its little spike up higher here the last 2 days back to 1720. Bonds have kind of finally come over 114, sound enough, but they too are on their lower end of their range. 114.05, high end for the day, low end for the last couple of days. Bitcoin is also lower, 62,000 in change on the cash. Oil is finally taking a little bit of a breather, down $1.06. Oil has been going sideways to a little bit lower the last week or so. Gold, on the other hand, has been staying bid. It is down $9 this morning, but as you can see, gold at or around its highs. Silver is doing the opposite today. Silver's higher as gold is lower. Silver took a breather yesterday. For earnings, you've got Las Vegas Sands and AA. Not too much to get excited about. What do you think here, Saznov? We've had a little bit of two-sided action the last couple of days in the market. Opening higher.
Yeah, I would be nervous about any market that's opening higher. I woke up in the middle of the night last night, and at one point I saw the SPOOs were down about 12, 13. The NASDAQ was down like 70 or 80, and I'm like, oh boy. And I didn't do anything, but I really care about the bonds. I think if the stock market really wants to go higher, it's gotta go lower first. It's gotta open lower and rally. I think if it opens higher, every higher opening is a sale. But
you did say that yesterday on the close.
It's worked every day so far, so I don't think you can buy them here. But I think you can buy bonds. That's it. Anyway, let's do it. We're running late. We got to go. It's Confirm and Send. Hey, John, if somebody could just come in and fix the screen, it'd be great. So I'm familiar with the enter at 45 days and exit and roll at 21 DT mechanics. Most of the research for these trades is done in the context of strangles and sometimes from iron condors. I was wondering if you follow similar mechanics for vertical spreads or if you adjust close early based on direction.
It's a tough question to answer. I will say mechanically, when things are going wrong on a vertical spread, now not a very tight one, you know, $1 to $5 wide vertical, I'm probably leaving. It's a directional bias. I put it on when it was a 60-40, maybe 65-35 probability of success. And I let the cards play where they may. I try to manage it at 21 days. And I would probably look to roll if it wasn't going well. Same strikes, assuming that, you know, my short strikes haven't been breached and it's not deep in the money. So on a tight vertical spread, you're pretty much stuck. That's the trade that it was on entry. On a wider one that simulates more of a naked option, I would always look to sell the other side. It doesn't use any more buying power, and it seems to have worked well for me inside that 21 days.
So most of the research done in the context of strangles and sometimes iron condors, and most of it's done with SPY. So would we follow similar mechanics for vertical spreads? Yes, but the difference is, there's more factors on vertical spreads, and sometimes the difference between following the same mechanics and not is very marginal as far as results go. So whether you adjust close early based on direction, the reason we follow for vertical spreads and everything else is to keep consistent with all the different positions we have on. If you like the variations in duration, which is not a bad thing, and if you like the position you have on, like your assumption remains the same and you feel strongly about kind of what your you want to let what you have on go to maybe make more money, or you're nearing a max loss and you want to give it a chance to come back, there's nothing wrong statistically with holding vertical or defined risk spreads past the 21 DTE. Like I said before, the difference on long-term results is not even statistically significant on the verticals, on defined risk stuff as opposed to undefined risk stuff. But again, for consistency purposes, we like to move everything. So if you're asking Tony or myself, we do everything at 21DT. If you want to do just undefined risk and let the defined risk go, sure, you can do it. Mm-hmm. We don't. You can. Let's go to the next slide. I've noticed that in the last week or so, the time in zero DT trades has become even more critical. It seems like the winners I've been fortunate to close could have easily turned into losers if I waited longer. What is your take? And has the low-hanging fruit been harvested? And is it time to step back from this trade?
I mean, no, I don't think that. I mean, it is what it is. I don't think the low-hanging fruit, I don't think there was anything there except that the market has cooperated for zero-day trades. They're still quite popular, and they've still been working pretty well. I mean, even a day like yesterday, you had opportunity to manage winners, and obviously you could have had some losers too. So for me, I don't think you have to change anything. If you like zero-day, then that's the place to go. Volatility has crept up a little bit, made it a little bit easier, a lot more premium. I mentioned yesterday that zero-day $20 wide iron condor that we like to look at, or Tom likes to look at when he puts on, usually trades around $4.50, was trading $5.75. Same trade, higher implied volatility. It worked nicely yesterday. Who knows what's going to happen today?
I mean, based on our research from yesterday, you take about...
Managing these trades is the key.
Yeah, I mean, it's 45 times more risk than a 45-day trade. And as far as P&L goes, swings and things like that. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't know if anything's changed. You know, I don't know that everything's become... last week, we've had a lot of volatility. So, obviously, when there's more volatility and there's bigger swings intraday, you know, it's, yeah, if you close early, it's going to be better. But I'm not sure anything has fundamentally changed other than, you know, we've had a volatile week. But, you know, I think you always have to match the zero DT trades quickly. Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Our research over the last year does not support that. It says that if you manage the trades early, that's been great. But if you didn't manage trades early, it's still been good.
Yep, so, that is true.
You know, over time.
Because the market cooperated.
Yeah, sure. Sure, of course. But has the low-hanging fruit been harvested? It'll never be harvested. It's going to be like this every day forever.
Right.
Let's go to the next slide. As we're heading into earnings season, I'm trying to figure out how best to allocate my trades between earnings trades, zero DT, and my core 45-day trades. Is there anything you recommend?
I mean, we haven't done any research to give you what a blended portfolio would look like.
Well, we did actually this past weekend.
Oh, for in your show.
Yeah.
Yes, and I don't know because I didn't see your slides, but I'm safe to say that earnings trades were a very small part, if any at all.
Of the discussion I gave this weekend, they were zero. And so yeah, were zero DT trades, because those are not part of, to me, those are not part of allocating a kind of a core portfolio type thing. Those are just a trading account moves. Those are like scalping, engagement, all that stuff. Is there anything wrong with earnings trades? No, they're just hard. Is there anything wrong with zero DT trades? No, they're just hard. And the core 45 days is where all the mechanics come into play. The problem with earnings trades is there's not many mechanics we can help you with. And the problem with zero DTs is, you know, although we do a ton
of... You don't have time to be correct. You got to be on top of it, you know.
We do a ton of research, but, you know, there's only so much the research can do.
All our mechanics are geared towards giving yourself time to be right.
The way I would allocate the trades in this case, we never, ever allocate too much towards earnings or too much towards zero DT. So for us, it's always less than 5 or 10%. Always. In many cases, it's less than 1 or 2%. But depending on account size, if your account size is smaller, it could be, you know, 5, 10, 15%, 20%. But that's it. Never more than that. Let's go to the next slide. What factors go into determining span margin? We've talked about it a bunch on the show recently. We have done some segments in the past on this, but span margin, Tony, like obviously number of days to expiration is a very important part of span margining. The underlying
the further away, the less margin it will take.
Yes. Time. Yeah. So span margining is based essentially on risk. So the further away you are, the number of days to expiration, the less risk you have, okay, because there's the gamma risk is less. The volatility of the underlying applies.
Yes, span margining will go up when volatility increases.
Yes. Now, in another like SEC margin, volatility doesn't come into play. Number of days to expiration doesn't come into play when you use listed options, because that margining system was developed like 50 years ago. It's never been changed. The span margining system is more recent. So days to expiration, volatility, what else? I'm just thinking about the major things. What else did you say before? Price?
Yeah, price.
Size of contract. I think
no patent day trading rules.
No, but that has nothing to do with span. So really with span margining, it has to do with it's all kind of risk-based margin. And
the closer you get to expiration too.
That stays to expiration. So it's much more focused on volatility and duration, and those adjust over time. And that's the primary difference.
It's not set by the brokerage firms, it's set by the CME.
Yep. And the other piece that Tony just mentioned that's important about span is that the overnight requirement's the same for everybody, but the intraday requirement is different depending on the firm. We are, generally speaking, we are 25% of span intraday, and that is pretty low. It's not the lowest in the world, but it's the lowest of all the major firms. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go next slide. When you put on a long butterfly for a credit, so the only way you can do a long butterfly for credit is like a broken wing butterfly, right?
Sure.
Long butterfly for credit is like a broken wing butterfly or a skip strike butterfly.
Yep.
Is that a positive gamma trade even though you received a credit?
Positive gamma trade even though you received, no, it's not a positive gamma trade. It's a short gamma. You have a embedded wider short spread than you do the long spread.
Yeah, I was trying to have the... Go ahead.
It's going to have gamma risk to it because, look, even when you put on a put broken wing butterfly, you have positive delta on the trade, but you have more risk to the downside. So if you have more risk, then it has to have gamma risk to it too. So it's not a positive gamma trade.
Yeah, I was trying to
a regular butterfly for a debit could be conceived as a positive gamma trade.
Yeah, I was trying to think, if you did this, like if you did a broken wing butterfly that was way out of the money, could you make it so that it was positive gamma? But I don't really know if it would be.
I mean, you may, but ultimately, even though the broken wing butterfly on the put side has positive delta to it,
yeah, sure.
When you put it on, it's going to have a lot of negative delta if things go wrong. So you can't just look at what the numbers show you.
Yeah. I it's a weird question, but
it's like saying in a ratio spread, does a pure ratio spread have gamma risk? A 1/2 ratio spread. Sure, it most certainly does.
Sure.
If I buy a much further out of the money option to reduce my gamma risk, I might reduce it, but I'm not eliminating it. I'm certainly not giving positive gamma.
That's fair. Let's go to the next slide. And the last one. Is the VIX broken? It seems to me like the range of daily moves lately is larger than what the VIX would suggest. Am I right or am I crazy?
You're crazy, and I'm sad. You need to seek some help immediately, if not sooner. No, nothing's broken here. I mean, we've had some intraday moves that have been outside the expected move and gone nowhere for the day. Been in, well inside the expected move. So, no, I don't think VIX is broken. You know, what are we, about 70% of the time, it's perfect.
Yeah, like you're always going to have, different kinds of circumstance where volatility, I mean, 15% of the time, it's always going to do what you don't expect it to at a minimum. And so, I mean, what do we had 3 or 4 days in a row? No, the VIX isn't broken. It can never be broken. It's an actively traded real-time you know, marketplace. It can't break. It can just not work for a couple of days.
Right, right.
It's impossible for it to be broken. Can't break. It's not set by it. It's not set by some arbitrary third party. Then it can break. This is just supply and demand. It's as real as it gets.
Very good. Let's take a quick 90-second break. You want to come back with more Tasty Live after this? You want to? You want to? We've got an option, Jive. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.